The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. I think I'm going to have to let it go as well. I'm with you on that, to let it go.
Right.
But one of the things that I find hard to let go is the fact that there are 7,000 people who can attend a wedding in New York at the Satmar Shul, the Kiryas Yoel Shul in Brooklyn, in New York. They did it under the radar so that the authorities couldn't find out about it. But, of course, I've seen a video of the listen, 7,000 people at a wedding. Let's start with that, never mind the fact that we're in a COVID situation. Apparently, the New York State governor has fined the Satmar leadership, the shul, I suppose, $15,000 for breaking their COVID restrictions, but not one mask in sight. These weddings are just something to witness, with so many people packed together in a small, well, not a small area, it's a massive area, but people packed together. I just, I'm still failing to understand how this is all happening. I know that there are lots of conspiracy theories floating around about it is a virus, it isn't a virus, it's being manufactured by this and that and the next thing. But I just, I'm still struggling. I'm really struggling to understand.
There's actually nothing to understand. I think it's pure arrogance. I think it's incredibly selfish. And in my view, perhaps unlearned, it stands counter to everything that we value as Jews, which is the preservation of life at all costs. You know, even if you want to have a bigger wedding and even if you want to celebrate, do you need 7,000 people? That is a statement. You know, if you wanted to have 100 people or 200, you know what, go wild and even have 500 people in a venue that can fit 7,000, spread it out a little bit. You can do things better. And the fact that you've chosen to have 7,000 people says that you don't care about authority. You don't care about the danger here. And you can't say that it doesn't exist because many people from within that community have lost their lives. Many, many, many thousands of people have died from within that community. So it's arrogance in the most terrible extreme, in my view.
I find it difficult to understand what the interpretation of Judaism is where that's concerned, but there are a few interesting, very, very quick snippets. Prime Minister Netanyahu has been nominated, we are told, for a Nobel Peace Prize. And the fact that he's been nominated by a former Peace Prize winner in the form of David Trimble, Lord David Trimble, means that the Peace Prize Committee is forced to consider his nomination. Tel Aviv has been named as one of the most wheelchair-friendly cities in the world.
Incredible.
Which came as a little bit of a surprise to me because I didn't necessarily consider it to be all that wheelchair-friendly, but apparently I'm wrong. And so it's been included on that list. And Israel has been named as the best country in the world for women entrepreneurs. A few snippets about, you know, where we stand in the big, wide, wonderful world before we start talking about some of the more serious stuff.
Just before we do get on to that, so Brian says the song was terrible that you played. Where do you find them? Karen says, no, it's been exceptional music. Linda says, no chance here. That last song was terrible. My slippers couldn't dance fast enough. I don't know. Ronnie says, I agree about that song. If 2020 was a soundtrack, that would be the song. Anthony, you know what? Let's just talk about what's going on in Israel.
At least they're writing to you, Howard. Let's be honest.
Is this writing in or is this abuse? I don't know. Not that I would have it any other way. All right. Taking a look at some of the stories that are important and that we want to talk about. An Air Force training flight crash yesterday killed two pilots in southern Israel. Terrible story.
Yeah, very, very sad story indeed. This is obviously Air Force training school. A young cadet was one of those who perished in the crash alongside his trainer, who was a 42-year-old major in the reserves, who was also an F-16 fighter pilot. The young training cadet, Lihu Ben Bassan, 19 years old from Rishon LeZion, had only started the Air Force pilot training program 4 months ago, when he and Itai Zaidan, the major who was training him from Kibbutz Shoval, were involved in this crash. It's not exactly clear what transpired. They were flying in what's known as a two-seater Grob G120, which in Israel, in the Air Force, which where they use this airplane for training, they call it a snunit, which means literally a swallow, the bird, a swallow. Unfortunately, the snunit took off from Hatzirim Air Base, and the control tower said that they lost any contact with the plane, and then it came down in a field. Unfortunately, both of the occupants of the aircraft were killed immediately in the accident. The Air Force were on the scene pretty quickly. There was a fire as a result of the crash, but unfortunately, neither of the two occupants survived the crash. Very, very sad indeed. This is the first time that the Israeli Air Force has had a crash, I think, like this, I think, since 2008. So it does happen from time to time. And of course, it is dangerous to fly, especially when you're training people to fly, and training people to fly ultimately what will be quite serious and dangerous aircraft. But this is certainly a situation which will be investigated by the Air Force. And of course, our condolences go to the families of the two men who were killed. Our hearts are very sore today over this incident.
Absolutely, really, really, just so sad when this happens. Activities in the Knesset seem to be leading to another election once again. I know I want to ignore the story, but I can't.
We can't ignore it. Well, because there's a few strange things that are going on. First of all, we are now in November of 2020, and Israel still doesn't have an approved budget for this year, for 2020 I'm talking about. Most countries are already approving budgets for 2021, and some are even thinking a little bit further ahead than that, but we don't have a budget for 2020 yet, and this has been delayed over and over again, and in fact was even the subject of a high court hearing yesterday, when the High Court Chief Justice the Justice President Esther Hayut was on the bench along with some of her fellow judges, and they wondered why the government is in violation of the law, and there seems to be no explanation. According to the judges sitting on the High Court bench, the government has been sent away to come back to the court to explain why it is that we have no budget. Excuse me. But the whole issue of the budget is that we are supposed to have a budget approved by the 23rd of December. And according to the current state of play, if by December the 23rd, a state budget has not been passed, then we would effectively automatically go into an election situation. The Knesset would automatically be dispersed. And of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu would remain on as Prime Minister in a caretaker government until such time as we can go to elections. So December the 23rd is not that far ahead. And there doesn't seem to be substantial progress towards actually presenting a budget and having it passed. I mean, that date is less than a month away from now, and still we don't see massive progress. But in the meantime, some people, some members of the Knesset are saying, rather than wait until December the 23rd, we're going to try and steal the moral high ground. We're going to try and take control of the situation and not just allow it to degenerate into, let's go into an automatic kind of election situation. So both Benny Gantz and Yair Lapid have intentions to bring votes to the Knesset next week that could potentially disperse the Knesset and take us to an immediate election. And Yair Lapid, who's of course the head of the official opposition and also the head of the Yesh Atid party, said that he intends to bring a vote next Wednesday to the Knesset, which will potentially preempt the dispersal automatically on December the 23rd. And his vote on Wednesday is effectively just a pre-vote to disperse the Knesset and to go to elections. Benny Gantz has said he doesn't want to be dragged by Lapid into such a situation, and that he would prefer to bring a vote already on Monday, which could potentially disperse the Knesset. So it seems like next week is going to be potentially a whole series of discussions and votes that might take us to an election. And if those don't succeed next week, then we could potentially on the 23rd in any event be led into an election. And of course, again, The opinion polls are out to see who has more seats than the others, to see what might happen in the event that we would go to an election. And one, the polls seem to be quite different in the results that they've achieved. One poll has suggested that Likud has quite a solid lead over Naftali Bennett, Yamina party, 31-21. Another poll has given the Likud a lead of only 27-23, but all polls seem to be pointing in the same direction, with the Likud having a slight lead and Yamina second, but quite a close second behind. So who knows what will be next week?
Yeah, indeed, and it's just one of those things that I suppose we've got to get through like the country does. The next stage of Prime Minister Netanyahu's trial has been delayed by the courts. Why have the courts decided to delay this, Anthony?
So this, again, has been a subject of a lot of discussion, and we spoke about it a week or two ago, that the court was asked to delay the trial. And now, finally, we understand that the court has agreed to delay the trial, and not only agreed to delay the trial, but actually agreed to exempt defendants from attending a hearing in December. And so the current situation is that there was a hearing that was scheduled for December the 6th that the defendants apparently were due to have attended. And now the defendants' response to the indictment will not be heard on that date. And instead, a hearing will be held to deal with preliminary allegations raised by the defendant's attorney, including, we're told, defects in the indictment. So this is going to be somewhat of a technical discussion. But the real moment that the defendants will be required to attend in order to answer to those allegations will be January the 4th. January the 13th. First submissions will be made by the defendants on January the 4th, and the hearing to answer the charges will be January the 13th. And then the evidentiary stage of the trial will only begin in February. So slowly but surely, the thing is just being dragged out and out and out. And while there is some precedent to cases being dragged out in the court system, clearly there's being something of a tactic to draw this out and to delay it as much as possible. Part of those tactics now seem to have paid off. Other of those tactics, not so much. But at least for now, we understand that Prime Minister Netanyahu will not be back in court to answer these allegations at least until January the 13th, according to the court's latest decision.
Okay, and this is another one of those stories. Before I let you go, tell us about the Tel Aviv Marathon. Apparently that's gone digital. Does that mean I can even run it from home?
Well, that's not 100% clear to me, because one of the things about these marathons is that really they've been designed to try to bring attention to the city itself rather than just encourage people to run on the spot wherever they happen to be, or run around the block wherever they are. But the current plan is that the race will take place digitally, which means that people will not be coming together to run, but rather will be running together separately, which is the motto that's now being used, all running together separately. And there will be the usual events, the full marathon, 42.2 Ks and a half marathon, 21.1 Ks and a 10 K run, and also a 5 K run. This is due to take place on February the 19th. And there will be an app, and the people will be sent their packages, including t-shirts and winners medals and all the things that you might need in a run that you would do together with everybody else. But you will just put, apparently everybody will be starting from a different place. And so theoretically, I'm guessing that you could do it from your home, because what's the difference if you do it online within Tel Aviv as opposed to doing it elsewhere? So it's not clear to me that they're making this available to people outside of Tel Aviv, but apparently you will be able to run wherever you happen to be, and there will be this app, and people will kind of do it together, and you'll be able to share photographs along your route and whatever it is. So I'm not exactly sure how they're going to make sure that everybody runs the required distances, whether there's going to be a predetermined route and people just run along the route at different places, starting at different locations. But this is kind of just one of those inventive things in order to try to make sure that the event does take place rather than to be forced to cancel it, which is what's been happening with many of these sporting events these days. So we're going to watch this a little bit more carefully, and I'm going to try and get a little bit more information to understand how it works. Because potentially, if you're not required to run within Tel Aviv along a predetermined route, then I guess people in Johannesburg could participate as well on the day, right?
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see how many people here do participate in it. I might not be one of them, but others might choose to be. It is 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow.